just a baby. Before I could speak, I would line up all my letter blocks alphabetically. Now it's my vocation and my passion to assign every decimal numbered shelf to every decimal numbered spine. I'm
hear the snap and crackle of the fire that we're sitting in front of. It's a beautiful evening and we decided to have a fire, but what goes well with a fire but some scary stories? And after talking about it, we thought, well, we could all come up with some scary stories that we've read in the past. So I think I'm going to pass it along to some of my co-hosts. Oh, by the way, you are listening to The Library Show on Raven Radio, and I'm Sarah Bell, but my co-hosts were all here today, Carrie Sagal and Brooke Schaefer.
Yeah, so, and I am here with one of what I think is the classic scary storytellers, writer of scary stories, Edgar Allan Poe. And I thought of Edgar Allan Poe when we were chatting about scary stories because he's a writer that my dad actually read to me as a child. And I think it was later on in my life that I actually read the short story, The Telltale Heart. But I wanted to read a small excerpt from it. So this is A Telltale Heart by Edgar Allan Poe, and this is right near the beginning, the second paragraph in. Poe writes, "It is impossible to say how first the idea entered my brain, but once conceived, it haunted me day and night. Object there was none. Passion there was none. I loved the old man. He had never wronged me. He had never given me insult. For his gold I had no desire. I think it was his eye. Yes, it was this. One of his eyes resembled that of a vulture, a pale blue eye with a film over it. Whenever it fell upon me, my blood ran cold. And so by degrees, very gradually, I made up my mind to take the life of the old man and thus rid myself of the eye forever."
And to fill you in about that story, it's about a young man who lives with an older man with this scary milky blue eye, and he becomes obsessed with this eye that horrifies him, and he gets an idea that he's going to go ahead and kill the old man to rid himself of the obsession. And for 7 nights, he creeps into the old man's bedroom, ready to kill him, but always the eye stops him. And on the 8th night, he goes in, and he creeps by degree closer and closer, aware at times that the old man is scared of the noises he's hearing, kills the man, dismembers him, and places his body parts in the floorboards, including his heart. That's about 4 a.m. when he's finished up with all that terrible work, and there's a knock at the door. 3 policemen come in. He's convinced. He hears this noise, thump, 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 thump. He's convinced the policeman can hear it too, and the story just gets a little crazier and crazier when the guilt of killing the old man overtakes the young man.
Yeah, I think that Edgar Allan Poe is really very gruesome and pretty scary. I think sometimes people think that, well, maybe, you know, he wrote several 100 years ago or more. I have no idea. And that could they possibly be as grotesque as the writing that sometimes we find today? And I think, indeed, he can be very scary.
And also really creepy. Like, he was definitely grotesque and, like, kind of graphic with the brutality, but also just, like, creepy with the things he would write about. And his characters were also always a little bit wild with, you know, crazed. They were mad. And I think of The Raven, too, the poem The Raven, which is just a creepy poem, even though nothing particularly gruesome that I remember happens in it.
Can I tell you a story about when I was like 16, maybe older, maybe 23, and I was staying at my parents' house. And it was a big Iowa farmhouse, enormous Iowa farmhouse. And I was reading a book by Thomas Harris, The Red Dragon. Perhaps you know Thomas Harris from The Silence of the Lambs. And it's this terrible story about a serial killer who fixates on families and watches them and then goes in to their house and does terrible things. And suddenly, halfway through the book, something occurred to me, that my parents were packing to go away on a vacation, and they planned to leave me alone in the house. And it was a very startling realization. And I actually had to go take the book and hide it somewhere because it scared me so. And that night I slept in their bedroom with our dog, and I just barricaded myself in that room, convinced that the red dragon was going to get me. So that was a very scary story, as is The Silence of the Lambs.
What's that one about? I'm not sure.
The Silence of the Lambs is about a FBI agent, a young woman who has to catch another serial killer, and she has to get help from Hannibal Lecter, one of the memorable serial killers in literary history. He has a further book, Hannibal, called Hannibal, and I bought it, but I reached my limit on the gore I could take, and I never finished that book. It was too much.
Speaking of gore, would you say you've read Stephen King, haven't you? Would you
I have. I don't find him to be a writer who depends on gore to tell his scary story. I like Stephen King. I like his writing. I particularly like his early books, which seem to me books about the fears a parent has for their children and the monsters and the terrible things that can happen to children. And it depends less on gore than the horror of what can happen to children.
Was there something about his son that you were going to share?
His son is an author. His son's name is Joe Hill. He decided to go under a different name. And I've read three books by Joe Hill, anticipating with the first one that he would be imitating his father. And he has quite a different style. A book that I remember is a book called Horns. The main character in that book is a man named Ig, who wakes up after a night of misbehaving, and he has horns on his head, small horns that no one else can see. He learns that as he gets near to people and is talking to them, that he has another quality, that they start to confess things to him and reveal dark secrets. And if he touches them, he can find their darkest, darkest secrets. One thing that you need to know about him is that he's under suspicion for some while ago having killed his girlfriend. And you don't know who's killed the girlfriend, but he's under suspicion. And as he discovers his powers, he learns that he can take their deep, dark secrets and actually push them to do things. So it's, where will this young man, Ig, go? What's going to happen to Ig? Is he the killer of the woman? And is he going to go too far with pushing people? And it was really intriguing and well-written, less horror than some kind of dark fantasy.
Well, how about if I am not a horror fiction reader. In fact, I'm the kind of person who, if there's something scary on television, that I run and leave the room and call out, you know, can you tell me what's happening? Because I'm such a wimp. But I do remember when I was in high school, and I wasn't particularly interested in my geometry class, and so I had hidden underneath my desk, sort of out of sight, I was reading Rosemary's Baby. And why I had that, I'm not sure. But I got to a point at which it was pretty exciting, and I drew my breath in, and everyone sort of looked back as, you know, wondering why I was finding geometry quite so scary. But at any rate, Rosemary's Baby was written, I think, I date myself, but I think in the late 60s, by Ira Levin. And it's not greatly well written, but it is certainly creepy. And so there's a couple, Rosemary and Guy Woodhouse. Oh, that's interesting. We had a principal named Mr. Woodhouse, and I won't comment on that, a superintendent. So they were nearly newlywed, and they move into this old luxury building called the Bramford. And it had big old high ceilings and working fireplaces, but it kind of had a reputation for some really rather unsavory things that were going on. A dead baby was wrapped in newspapers and abandoned in the basement. So even though one of their close friends, Hutch, who knew all about the building's sordid history, tried to warn them off, but they disregard him. So Rosemary is a housewife, you know, late 60s, and she desperately wants to be a mother. And her husband, Guy, is an actor, And he really just is so incredibly ambitious. Well, next door live an older couple, Minnie and Roman, and they're kind of ditzy. So at first you're not, you know, set up to expect them to be quite as evil as they are. But they do happen to head a coven of witches, and those witches have made a pact with the devil. Well, Rosemary wants a baby, Guy wants a leading part in a hit play, and the witches want. So there's a deal that gets made with the devil. And she, Rosemary, goes through a horrific impregnation. Is that the word? Yeah. And she also has a terrible pregnancy. And this is all wrapped up with what they gave up in order to have the things that they think they want the most. And it's a really gripping story because the plot line's pretty unusual. So that's...
I'm curious, Sarah, I've never read the book, but I think I've seen, like, scenes from the movie. I don't know that I've seen the whole movie. I'm curious what you think. Did you see the movie? What do you think of it?
No, I haven't, but I was reading some reviews about it, and people were saying that it was just really quite true to the book.
And maybe, Carrie, you've seen it.
I have not read the book, but I have seen the movie, and the creepiest thing about the movie is the 1960s relationship between the man and the woman and the young couple. Because the woman is just stay-at-home mom, has no willpower, is treated like a child, and it's extremely creepy to watch. And then having a coven head named Minnie is sort of creepy, too.
Or comical, maybe.
Yes. Comical.
Well, and wasn't Rosemary played by Mia Farrow?
Yes.
When she was sort of her very skinny, petite...
pathetic...
At that age, yeah.
I guess it was a horror for more reasons than one, it sounds like. Horror to discover what our gender dynamics used to be like.
Yeah.
Well, I remember reading when I was younger than in high school. I guess I was more in elementary school or maybe junior high, probably elementary school. A classic book called Scary Stories to Tell in the Dark. And actually, this is a popular book still to this day, even though it was published in 81, I think, the first time. There are at least up through Scary Stories to Tell in the Dark, Volume 3, and they're very popular at Kettleson Library. And I tell you, I loved this book when I was a kid, and I would get together with my friends, and we would take turns reading from it and, like, encouraging each other to look at the scary pictures. That was probably... much scarier than the writing itself, which is really kind of disappointing as an adult.
Down a little,
yeah.
I think they tone them down.
Right. But the pictures sure were scary. And I've come to learn that a lot of them are based on kind of stories that we tell around the campfire, that they're kind of based on like urban legends. There's one in here called The Hook, which is about kind of a classic, I don't know if you'd call it an urban legend, but something that a story that people tell. Which I think, I don't know if either of you want to tell that story. It's better than what's written in the book, so I don't think I'm going to read from the book.
I heard that as a young person. It's about a young woman and a man who go up to the hills to go petting, as they used to say in the day. And they're in their car, and the music's on, and the action's getting a little heavy when they hear a noise outside the car. And they turn on the radio they listen to the radio, and there's a news report that a psychopath has escaped from the hospital and is on the loose. And immediately the young woman becomes very afraid. Plus, she's not sure she wants to be up there in the car with this young man. And she asks, says, "We better go home. This is dangerous. We better go home." And the man just kind of, "Pshaw, pshaw, we don't need to go home. You're just being ridiculous." Well, she eventually convinces him to take her home. And he gets out of the car and goes around to let her out of the door, out of her door. And there, hanging from the door handle, was a hook.
Dun, 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 dun.
Ta-da. Well, and there was another one, though, that I remember you telling us about, Carrie, that was similar, where there's some sort of a scratching sound on the window. Can you tell us?
Yes, this story, I have a clear memory of when I was told it. My dad worked for the military, and we lived in Germany when I was a kid, and I was going through the woods with my sister Michelle and my best friend Horst, and he was telling the story of a couple that goes into the woods to do the same thing, make out in a car, and they hear a noise, and the man says, I'm going to go check it out, stay here, lock the doors, and he doesn't come back. But all night long, she hears this scraping sound that comes from the roof of the car, terrified out of her mind. And in the morning, the police arrive, and they look very alarmed, and they approach the car, and they say, close your eyes, get out of that car now. Don't turn back. Walk this way. And she gets out of the car, and she's terrified, petrified, trembling, walking away, and she looks back. And there, hanging from a tree, the body of her lover,
no.
with its fingernails scratching on the roof. That was what was interesting to me is that was told to me. It has a certain American feel to that story, but told to me by this German kid, Horst, back in 1970, probably, in Germany. And it's a story that was very popular in the U.S., The Hook.
But it had made it. It had made it to Germany somehow.
I can imagine that, but maybe that's me just being American-centric.
Oh, right.
Maybe it's a German story that made its way to America. I doubt it, though. It seems very American.
Well, speaking of Germany, we also have another guest in around the fire with us tonight for the library show. Paul Norwood is here, and I was wondering if he has any scary stories that he remembers from his youth, which was growing up in France. You were born and raised in Paris. And do you have any, not to put you on the spot, but do you have any scary stories that you remember as a child?
I read a lot of the same ones that you read. And in fact...
The scary Stories book?
I read the Scary Stories book.
Okay.
I read Edgar Allan Poe, which is probably better in French because it was translated by Baudelaire, who is one of the greatest poets ever. So it's one of the few books that are... unquestionably excellent in translation. Edgar Allan Poe is a good writer too, but they're very popular in French, and so I read all those stories.
So what of Poe's stories, what do you sort of recollect as maybe one of the scariest?
I don't know, maybe the one with the ape. It's not really scary, with the orangutan.
What's that one? I don't know that one. Tell us that story.
Yeah, I'll think a minute. I can think what the title of that is.
It's one of those locked room mysteries where there's a room that's locked and a murder happened in the room and there's strange clues.
Murder at the Rue Morgue?
Yes, it's in fact set in France, I believe. And the woman is stuffed up the chimney.
Ooh.
It's very odd. And I won't explain it otherwise.
Sounds gruesome. So it's a story about a character discovering this woman's stuff.
Yeah, it's not actually scary. And I read Stephen King and also went through this kind of possibly common male teenager phase of reading Stephen King and H.P. Lovecraft and such.
I'd forgotten about H.P. Lovecraft. And I think one of the writers besides King who's writing, and it may be... I don't know, maybe a little more popular genre, but Peter Straub, who has written, he may have written Omen, and then of course...
That was made into a movie also. That's how I know of that.
Yes, which is very, very spooky.
Yeah,
and I was trying to think of some of the other urban legends, and I think what you find when you're growing up is that you're sitting around a campfire and someone... swears on a stack of Bibles that this story is true, and because it was told to them by their sister's best friend's cousin's uncle's wife. So, of course, a direct line means that it must be true. And I think that, Carrie, can you share that one about the roommates, the college roommates' death? Because I think your mom said... Didn't she believe in that story? Or
no, what my mother told me is, my mother went to college, and if I remember the story correctly, she went to college a little early than everybody else on her dorm floor, so she was put in a room with one other girl But another part of the story I remember is that there was some sort of orientation where they were told this scary story. So my mother didn't experience this as reality. She experienced it as a story. It's about two girls in a dorm room who are alone in the dorm room because of the holidays. And one has to go down the hall to the bathroom to take a shower and doesn't come back. And the girl left in the dorm room starts to hear noises out in the hallway, sort of dragging and thumping and sliding and dragging and thumping. And suddenly the noises at the door, scratch, scratch, scratch. And she pretty much works herself up into such a lather that eventually she falls asleep or passes out. And when she wakes up in the morning, there are people knocking at her door, saying, "We're going to get you out of there. Are you okay? Are you okay?" And she comes and opens the door. And there is the body of her dead roommate. And it had been her roommate scratching at the door, wanting in. And the killer, we never find out about. But my mother got told that, she said, when she was in college. And it terrified her, being a young woman from a small town in Ohio.
And this would have been like, what time? What kind of, what
decades? My mother probably went to college when she was in 1960. Okay. I was born in 62. She married when she was a junior, and then I was born 9 months later, and she never finished her college education because there was nothing like daycare back in the day. So,
but what I find interesting is that these stories have been around for so long, and they're still around. You know, they're still told around campfires,
and they evolve a little bit. So nowadays, urban legends might feature iPhones and texting, whereas back in the day, it would have been a note slipped under the door.
Right.
And I wonder what is intriguing to people about these scary stories? Why? Because I'm not one who really gravitates towards them. But what is the interest? Why do we have those stories?
Yeah, I'm curious about that, too, because I think about when I was really little, one of the things that I loved to do with my siblings, my sister and my brother, was we would ask our dad. It was a game we asked him to play. We would ask him to, our dad, to go hide in the house somewhere, and we would have to turn all the lights off, and then the game was to go find him. But we were terrified the whole time of, like, going to find him, and sometimes we got so worked up that we couldn't even do it. You know, we had to get our mom to, like, go say the game's off or whatever and, like, turn the lights on. But it was like this, so it is, I'm curious about that. Like, you kind of, we want it. It was thrilling. Like, we wanted to be frightened. But we also, when we were in the midst of it, it was like, whoa, this is too much. And I wonder if there's some sort of, like, thrill that we get from reading it. And we find books, like you were saying, Carrie, with Hannibal, where it's like, finally, you're kind of like, oh, this is just too much. I can't do it anymore. But there's some part that's thrilling or exciting. I don't know if those are the exact quite words.
Well, I know in some cases, in some of the really old fairy tales, we call them fairy tales, but they were very much cautionary tales. And they had a lot of gruesome stuff in them. I think, you know, Grimm's fairy tales have been kind of cleaned up. We're not getting the original version. And they were not stories that that you told to children. They were stories that adults would sit around and tell each other. And the kids might be somewhere, you know, outside of the you know, group around the fire and would hear them. But that they really weren't for children because they, you know, people died and were gruesome. Have you got any theories, Carrie?
No, other than there must be some pleasure in being scared. And I have a small appetite for it. I don't like the gruesome parts. I do like the scary part of it. Can I tell one last?
Yes,
is there time? Okay, so I can remember two books that scared me. One I've already talked about. The other, when I was in the Peace Corps in Kenya, a friend and I were staying in a kind of this rundown tourist hotel, and I had a copy of The Exorcist. And I don't think I've ever seen The Exorcist. And I'm reading The Exorcist, and I got to a passage that was just terrifying to me. And I tried to remember recently, what was the passage? And I seem to remember, was the main character someone named Regan, the little girl? And they describe her coming down the stairs, sort of all bent over, spider-like. And that image just caught me and terrified me to pieces. And I do think I was with a friend. They weren't in the room at the time, so I had some time all by myself with the image of a person walking like a spider down a set of stairs. That was very scary.
Did it stop you?
I read the whole book. Okay. I don't think I've ever seen the movie. I find it easier to read things than to watch. Yeah. So I don't like to watch horrible things.
I remember not well, it was scary in an interesting way, the movie Fargo, which I don't know if I was told by a friend that it was hysterically funny. And so I went home and I just happened to have an evening when nobody was in the house. And of course, then you hear all kinds of sounds and weird things. And I'm thinking I'm going to watch this movie that's going to make me laugh and be very funny. And I don't know if you've seen the movie, but there are parts where they're putting, you know, body parts in wood chippers and just being very... Well, you have to be off there, you know, psychologically defective. And I went in to my friend and I said, how could you tell me that was a funny movie? And she just laughed and she said, well, if you know anything about people from the Dakotas, that's just, you know, that had all the stereotypes about, you know, all that. And I said, it was the most gruesome movie I'd ever seen in my life. And, of course, part of it was that I think that I was home alone and I could, you know, probably read. You hear all the bumps in the night when you're by yourself.
Do you have any, Sarah, stories that you were told, like urban legends that were kind of passed on to you?
Well, I think the one probably that I was familiar with was, oh, I just maybe threw my notes into the fire. But was the one about the hook, about, you know, making out in Lover's Lane. But what was interesting is when I did a little looking up on the internet was that there are many urban legends that are in some way based in fact. And there was one about the body that was hidden in the motel room under the bed. And in fact, some people came into a hotel room and they just could not understand where this horrific odor was coming from. And sure enough, there was a body that was stashed under the bed. Another one that I think had some of those, you know, something like it happened in real life was a story about people coming to a Halloween party and seeing a woman who was, you know, hanging from a tree outside. And everyone just thought, oh, wow, that's such a realistic Halloween decoration. And in fact, the woman was a real woman hanging from a tree. And the sort of a variation of that was a young lad was trying to do something dramatic at a Halloween party and, in fact, did, you know,
hurt himself.
Yeah. So some of those urban legends are based, you know, loosely on something that's really happened. And I think some of them are probably pretty far-fetched.
I wonder if anyone around this campfire has read something like Bram Stoker's Dracula. And I haven't myself, so I'm just curious if anyone has read it, what they think about it in relation to like a scary story or, I don't know, maybe no one here has actually.
I haven't.
I have to confess I have not. And I've only read parts of Frankenstein, but...
Frankenstein was another one I was wondering about, like these kind of classic monster stories.
I tried to read Frankenstein, and I don't think it's scary.
No.
I think it's incredibly boring.
Mm-hmm. I think in some cases, I think the language can really interfere. And Poe can be a challenge to read, except that he is just some of his... I remember that when he was as a prisoner, and was that... I think the main character was a prisoner, and maybe that was during, I think, the French Revolution. And the prisoner was tied down, and there was this...
Pit and the pendulum.
The pit and the pendulum, right. And you could just... His descriptions really were rich, if you could kind of get over what we might consider dated language.
Yeah.
Well, you know what? We have reached the point at which we're going to wrap things up a little bit. I'd like to thank you for listening to The Library Show on KCAW Raven Radio. And it's been fun to get together with my co-host. So I'm Sarah Bell. And
I'm Brooke Schaefer.
Carrie Siegel.
Our guest over here.
Paul Norwood.
And this is Our Fire.
So please listen again, and we hope you find some scary stories.